Good afternoon, everyone. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Polysports here on Blog Talk Radio, part of Global Patriot Radio Network. 7 days a week, seven shows. I apologize for not using my startup music, but you know what? I forgot to click it in there. So there's that. Well, anyway, 7 days a week we are here, and it begins every Monday. The Vito Esposito Show featuring Vito and Big Al, Mama Mia No Sharia, every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Tuesdays at 6 p.m., the Cross and Crescent Discussion featuring Eric. Right now he's sort of on a semi-hiatus, but there have been people filling in for him. That's Tuesdays at 6 Eastern. Of course, every Wednesday, 5:30 Eastern Time, Hank Jones, that's me, with Hank Jones Poly Sports. Thursdays, Paul Sutliff is in at 6 p.m. Eastern with the Sutliffian Report. And then Fridays at noon, Andrew Herod, Conservative Casual Friday. Take sort of a swing going Saturday night, 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern time, with Minister Usama Dakduk, aided by the beautiful Christie, revealing the truth about Islam. And then Sundays, Eric is back with the continuation of Cross and Crescent, with Real Interfaith Dialogue. That's one you have to download an app. You can't just come in and start monkeying around. And Holger is back. Holger used to have a show on Global Patriot Radio. He is now doing some stuff on his own here on Blog Talk Radio. Just look him up. I think he goes by Holger 2 if you look up the username. Meanwhile, if you want to interact with the show outside of normal show hours, email me, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Or, of course, during the show, call in, 319-527-6706. If you go to Facebook, just type in Hank Jones Poly Sports, you'll find me, such as it is. I don't really maintain the page as much as I do, just post updates. Like I said before, I go to Facebook to get my daily Candy Crush thing. That's it. I mean, I shouldn't say that. That's it. But that's, I mean, I go as much for that as anything. Of course, on Twitter, at HPolys. But again, during the show, if you want to listen in or talk, 319-527-6706. Of course, you can always come in through the regular internet portal, blogtalkradio.com. Look for live. And then down on the lower right, look for Global Patriot Radio under chatting or chatters. And that'll get you here. Not sure. Still not sure if you have to have an account to do it, because I have an account separately. So anyway, I'm here in the official Hank Jones Polysports Space Force Observation Outpost with my little Aussie. My beautiful wife is actually off helping a friend who's going through some stuff, was in a car accident recently, needs some help with some stuff. So my wife's helping her out today. But she is still working hard, as she always does. Yeah, speaking of phones, Sue from New Mexico is on the lines listening. As is, I believe, it'll be our guest later on today. I'm pretty sure that's who that is. But anyway, that's one, like I said, that's one way to listen. That is one way to listen. You just call in, and then when you're ready, if you want, click, as they say, the one on your phone. And that will tell me that you got something to say. Anyway, let's get to our, before that, let's get to our first internet laughies of the day. First from Pamela Hensley on Twitter. Pamela Hensley is an actress. She was on the show Matt Houston. Anyway, she tweeted the other day, said, there was a drag queen performance at the White House today. I wonder if Biden went to the bank to get a stack of ones. You just see him eating his ice cream and doing that? I can. And this one from the Babylon Bee, always a good laughy. China threatens to fire senators who voted for TikTok ban. Oh, God. Let's get to our obits. Late last Wednesday, the world was finally rid of Jacob Lutyens at 103 years old. Jacob Lutyens was a Dutch Nazi collaborator during World War II. After being convicted in absentia, he escaped to Paraguay with the help of, believe it or not, Mennonites. No lie. Mennonites helped him escape. They just dropped a large rug on my book. Anyway, he later relocated to British Columbia, Canada, became a college professor. After he was tracked down in 1992 by the Frisian Dutch Nazi hunter Jack Koistra, a.k.a. the Frisian Simon Wiesenthal, Lutyens was deported back to the Netherlands. He was tried and convicted, and he was sentenced to 28 months in prison. Canada forbade his return, stripped his citizenship, and thus left him literally countryless for the remainder of his existence. Good riddance. I mean, he may not have worked at the camps, but my God. Thursday, we lost Rock and Roll Hall of Fame drummer Dino Danelli. He was an original member of the Young Rascals, which later became the Rascals. That sounds a hell of a lot like a Spinal Tap. After a period of declining health, he was 78. After the Rascals, he went on to play in bands with several guitarists, Leslie West from Mountain and Little Steve Van Zandt of the E Street Band. We also lost former Syracuse basketballer and multi-team coach Lewis Orr to melanoma and pancreatic cancer at 64. His most recent stop was an assistant at Georgetown, where he worked with former New York Knicks teammate, Hoya great Patrick Ewing. Friday, we lost bassist Rick Anderson, formerly of the Tubes, at age 75. Earlier this year, we lost another former member of the Tubes, backup singer Reese Stiles. She passed away. I had not realized that. She was only 72. Saturday, we lost P22, euthanized at approximately age 12. I know, you probably know where this is going. P22 was a mountain lion who roamed a park and wooded areas in the Los Angeles area. Now, why it made the list of notable deaths is beyond me, but it did. Sunday, we had three losses in the music and entertainment industry. Dancer and choreographer Stephanie Bissonnette succumbed to medulloblastoma at age 32. She made her mark in the Broadway version of Mean Girls. We also lost Felt and Primal Scream keyboarder Martin Duffy. He was just 55, complications from a fall. Finally, you'll recognize this song. I know you will. So we lost Terry Hall. He was the lead singer of The Specials. He was also a member of Fun Boy 3. Collaborated with groups such as Bananarama, Madness, and the Go-Go's, and that includes writing the Go-Go mega hit Our Lips Are Sealed. No, I won't play it. I will not. Terry Hall was 63. I remember I used to love this song when I was in high school and college. Sort of that reggae, but it's ska. It's not the same as reggae, but he was a ska performer. British ska band. This is called Gangsta by The Specials. Much better than Our Lips Are Sealed, I think you would agree. Turn it down a bit. Monday, we lost former Cincinnati Red and KC Royals pitcher Tom Browning. He won a World Series with the Reds. He pitched the 12th perfect game in Major League Baseball history against the Dodgers in 1988. No word yet on the cause. He was just 62. And then we also lost actress Sonia Eddy at age 55. She was a regular on General Hospital, also appeared in the film Barbershop. No cause listed for her either. And then somewhat shocking, during the overnight hours, we lost a Pittsburgh Steeler legend, running back Franco Harris, who died in his sleep at age 72. Ironically, it happened just 2 days before the 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception. For those that don't know, that's when he caught a ricochet pass meant for teammate John Frenchie Fuqua in the last moments of an AFC playoff game against the Oakland Raiders. Then took it into the end zone for the winning touchdown. Back then, 1972, the ball could not be touched by an offensive player before its final destination. In other words, if I'm playing and the ball tips off my hands and goes to a teammate, it wasn't a catch back then. It was illegal touch. Unless it hit a defender in the process. Well, in this case, Raiders argued that it was Touched by Frenchie Fuqua replay, although some say it's inconclusive. I think it's pretty conclusive. Jack Tatum, the assassin, as they called him, doing one of his famed head-first hits, knocked the ball away and went right to Franco Harris. Anyway, he won 4 Super Bowls with the Steelers. At his retirement, he was just short of the NFL career rushing record held by Jim Brown, which was broken during that same 1984 season by Walter Payton. No cause has been attributed to the death. It's just ironic as hell that this would happen 2 days before the 50th anniversary of the Immaculate Reception and 3 days before this Saturday, Christmas Eve. He would be honored by the Steelers this Saturday. They host the Raiders, their second to last game of the season, and they were going to honor Franco Harris. Bizarre. Very sad. Very sad. As we move on, don't forget my friends at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center and answering service. Help you serve your medical clinic, your medical office, hospital, service companies, information services, all kinds of stuff. They will do great work for you. And they also, if you're one who likes working remotely, wants to work at home, they work with remote staff as well. So if you're needing their services or you're thinking of employment, give them a call, 800-555-3738, or just go to their website, alliancecommunications.com. Another internet laughy. This is actually not a laughy, but a brilliant observation on Twitter by Susie Swift. Think about this as I'm reading it. Climate activists are calling for people to no longer have children. That's the first part. She then closes with this. Then who are we saving the planet for? Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Again, climate activists are calling for people to no longer have children. Then who are we saving the planet for? That's Susie Swift. News. Now let's get to our news. Sam Bankman-Fried fiasco. Now his parents are being looked into for their possible role. And I'll just give a quick rundown. I've got the article. The article is from Yahoo, but that's just where I go for my email. It's not, like I said, it's not my source. John Ray, the newly appointed CEO of FTX, revealed that he is investigating the role that disgraced founder Sam Bankman-Fried's parents played in the crypto exchange's recent implosion. He was asked whether the parents, both of whom are professors at Stanford Law School, had advised their son and been employed by his firm in any capacity. He said, "We indicated that Mr. Bankman had given legal advice. He received payments. The family certainly received payments." Ray added, "We're investigating the role that they played." Congressman, his name is Bill Huizenga, I assume he's related to Wayne Huizenga, but I don't know that. He noted that when Fried met with him in D.C. on December 8th of 2021, he was 15 minutes late and was accompanied by his father, who teaches a course on tax law at Stanford. I'll get nothing wrong with that. That's connections are what make the world go round. I mean, that's not what, you know, that's not where the problem is, obviously. His mother, meanwhile, cultivated extensive progressive political connections through her Democratic PAC, Mind the Gap, which rooted millions of dollars from Silicon Valley donors to Democratic campaigns, pledging to spend as much as $140 million in the 2020 election cycle. What the hell is wrong with this planet? They reportedly attracted wealthy donors by pledging to use statistical modeling to effectively leverage their contributions to elect the maximum number of candidates, an approach one donor called the money ball of politics. Major donors include Facebook co-founder Dustin Moskovitz, former Google CEO Eric Schmidt, and a host of other Silicon Valley heavy hitters. Including, by the way, Human Rights Watch co-chairwoman Amy Rao. So this thing ain't going to get any prettier, folks. It's just not. The first weird thing about this, though, although Yahoo actually refurbed the story, they refurbed it from, of all places, National Review. Now, I get it. National Review isn't as conservative as it was back when it was started and run by William F. Buckley Jr. Still, for Yahoo to even look in that direction is almost, dare I say, impressive. Okay, remember back before the midterm election when one of the congressional races I noted was in my own Florida District 10 between Maxwell Frost and Calvin Wimbish? Since then, a race which Frost won, as I predicted, Frost has gone public on social media with the news that, in trying to secure an apartment in D.C., he told the prospective lease agent he had bad credit. The agent said it would be fine. However, Frost was turned down and lost the $50 deposit. Now, he blamed it on having to quit his job a year and a half before the election and only doing gigs like Uber since then because he needed to be a full-time candidate. He also lamented that he wasn't allowed to be paid any money from his campaign until the very end. He then compared himself to AOC, not a good look, by the way, and said the system is really only affordable for the wealthy. Here's the thing. Nobody forced him to quit working. Nothing says he had to be a full-time candidate. In fact, our early congresspeople were not full-time candidates and did not serve ad infinitum. He has naturally neglected to mention in all the social media postings that as of November 28th, his campaign raised over $2.8 million. By the way, the total raised by all his opponents was around $257,000. That's in the final. That's in the general election. That's correct. The Maxwell Frost campaign raised over 10 times the amount of his three opponents. Here's the other thing he neglected. As of that date, November 28th, his campaign still had $346,000 in cash on hand. Now, sure, there are probably some bills due, but $346,000? And as a resident of his district, I'd sure like to know how the campaign spent that much. It sure as hell didn't show up in local media or billboards or signage. Seriously, his campaign raised and spent that much, and he's crying poor. Yeah, something's off here. I find it nearly impossible to believe that, one, he couldn't pull $5K or $10K from campaign funds to get established in D.C., or two, that he couldn't find roommates to lessen the cost of establishing himself in D.C. No, he is not owed or entitled to a luxury apartment or a bachelor pad. Anyway, it doesn't add up. And as such, I am following the advice. Hell, the damn near the edict, it's pretty much an edict that I pass on to all of you each week. By following Maxwell Frost's social media postings on the subject, I am commenting appropriately. I'm not being a jackwagon. I'm contacting his local office or trying to monitor their response as well as the progress. In fact, I started last Thursday by answering his social media post and contacting or trying to contact his local office. I will say this for the guy. He received a donation from a PAC that got money from Sam Bankman-Fried. He couldn't return it, but he did. As is allowed, he sent that amount to a local nonprofit called Zebra Coalition. They help LGBTQ plus youth who have been displaced by family, et cetera, for their quote unquote coming out. Look, while I don't wholeheartedly agree on the LGBTQ plus movement, I do believe that displaced youth, whatever their orientation or beliefs or whatever, should not be left homeless. I mean, that's easy for me to say. I had the best parents growing up. Whether they agreed or believed or whatever, they would never have displaced me or my siblings for coming out as gay. Hell, a couple months, I think I've told this story, a couple months before my mom died, Iowa was undefeated in football, and they were playing Northwestern. Now, my parents went to Northwestern. I grew up going to Northwestern games. If you've listened to this show at all, you know that. My mom was rooting for Iowa. She was heartbroken. She was heartbroken when Ricky Stanton got injured on that illegal face mask, or uncalled face mask. She was heartbroken when Northwestern won that day, blew our undefeated season in 2009. She was literally rooting for Iowa. That's how much my parents loved my siblings and myself. That's how good of parents they were. I mean, they just were. Anyway, in any event, though, it shows me Maxwell Frost has at least a little bit of integrity. Or not. Turns out he got big money from the local Islamic community, including some of the more known bigwig types. So while he might be trying to display integrity, he may also just be marching to the orders of the more vociferous element of the local anti-Semitic groups. Not coincidentally, Yahoo and the rest of big media have taken up his cause. While some, believe it or not, are sympathetic and predictably, quote, blaming the system, I got to hand it to Yahoo for actually pointing out that there is actually a reason. Yahoo went this far. Like, I always rank on them. Yahoo actually went so far as to say there is a reason why landlords and management companies run credit and background checks on prospective tenants. They want to know they're going to get paid. They want to know they don't have the next Unabomber moving into the fifth floor. By the way, as of today, Maxwell Frost has not answered any of my Twitter questions. His website lists no local contact numbers. That's kind of odd for a newly elected congressional representative, don't you think? Don't you? I'm doing Bill Murray. Don't you think? He's going to use about a 5-hour. Don't you think? Don't you think? I mean, a newly elected congressman and you go to Frost for Congress and you can't, I mean, you Google everything. I can't find a contact number for the guy. So I get this email while I'm on assignment. It says it's from Stephen Colbert. No, I get it. He didn't personally send it. Anyway, it's asking me to help raise money, or more accurately, contribute money, this Christmas season. The email subject line read, "Will you join me today to help our troops this holiday season?" It was sent by the USO. By the way, I have given money to the USO in the past. In the email, Colbert says he's a longtime partner of the USO, has made many trips overseas to entertain the troops. Boy, I bet those visits were a real blast. Sorry. Oh, and he's even visited our troops in Greenland. Isn't that wonderful? You're stuck in Greenland and you get Colbert. It's like going to Disneyland and coming home with an I'm the Fonz t-shirt, complete with double thumbs up design. So why am I going on about this? Okay, I'll tell you why. The fundraising goal. The goal is $75,000. Seriously? That's all he can raise? First of all, I hope he emailed Maxwell Frost and his team. Seriously, that's all he can raise? Look, I know about these fundraising campaigns like this. On a smaller level, you know, the kind where they take it to this phone bank and you call your supporters and your friends, pretend you're in jail and you need to raise funds to get out. I'm pretty sure this is a similar concept, i.e., celebrity fundraiser commits to an amount. And in this case, a staggeringly low amount tells me one of two things. One, Colbert is quite literally phoning it in. Or two, he knows people don't like him and would refuse to contribute solely based on his being involved. I'm not even sure which of these is more pathetic. Really not. Anyway, I am giving on my own to the USO. On my own. I would urge all of you, by the way, that are able to give, whether it's to USO or any local nonprofit that helps troops or underprivileged kids, families, homeless, hungry. I urge it during the holidays, obviously, because that seems to be when most people do it. But do it anyway. I mean, do it year-round. It's sure a hell of a lot better determining on your terms where you want your money to go versus some group of self-serving elected officials and bureaucrats that are literally so disconnected from America, it's hard to believe each of them actually is an American citizen. Okay, we're going to end that mini rant. God, I actually virtue signaled a bit there, didn't I? Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, who is, by the way, the state's top election official, is calling on lawmakers to abolish or reform their runoff election system in that state. Currently, four Georgia races, a candidate must win 50% or more of the vote to win an election outright. According to Raffensperger, cost and difficulty of conducting a runoff election was compounded even more this year. Why? Part of their election reform legislation from 2021 that somehow convinced Major League Baseball to move their All-Star game to 50-plus percent minority business-owned Atlanta to 20% minority business-owned Denver. Anyway, their reform shortened the runoff election cycle from 9 weeks to 4. This should be really interesting, really. I mean, you're seeing stuff like the ranked choice voting, runoffs. I think some of that's going to change. It's going to have to. There's just too much chance for fraud, and again, it's unwieldy. A little sleaziness from Congressman Maxine Waters. Okay, granted, with her, it's never just a little sleaziness. In any event, Representative Waters tried to end the meeting, the one I mentioned before, at which members of the House Financial Services Committee were questioning new FTX CEO John Ray III, when Texas GOP Congressman Lance Gooden challenged her authority. Now, here's a little bit more from Western Journal's website. Basically, she was conducting the meeting, of course. Sam Bankman-Fried, of course, was unable to attend, been arrested in the Bahamas like the day before. So presided anyway, the show must go on. You know, she's kind of grown used to having her own way, I think. She was definitely not pleased when Gooden challenged her authority. She tried to end the hearing before he was allowed to question the witness, as she was delivering her closing remarks. Lance Gooden interrupted to remind her, Chairwoman Waters, I've not had the opportunity to testify, or rather to question the witness. She stopped speaking as an aide whispered something into her ear, and unbelievably, she ignored him and returned to her closing remarks. Now, Gooden raised his voice, said, parliamentary inquiry, are all members entitled to question witnesses? Following a brief back and forth, the obviously unhappy Maxine Waters allowed him 5 minutes to question Ray. Thank you, Madam Chair. She responded, you're certainly welcome, sir. If you go to Western Journal and look it up, they actually have the whole exchange. Yeah, this is some excellent questions. Why indeed did she not want committee members asking questions? I mean, the question, does she really think that she and others can sweep things under the rug before the Republicans take control of Congress next month? It makes you wonder, really, at what point do these people stop with the fraud? I'm sure the shredders and the incinerators will be working overtime the next several weeks. And by the way, if that isn't monitored or stopped, bad on those that should be doing it. I mean, I hate to sound like a vindictive bastard, and I know there's the school of thought that says look forward. But really, if I run for Congress against a crooked incumbent and end up winning, you're damn right. One of the very first things I do when I park my ass in D.C. is find out just how crooked predecessor was. I mean, why the hell run on a platform of reform and fixes only to let bygones be bygones? In other words, it wouldn't bother me one iota to see Maxine Waters or Nancy Pelosi or Adam Schiff or any of their ilk tied to a stake over a boiling cauldron come February. Not one damn iota. Okay, moving on. The Twitter files. Yeah, the damn near ownership of the company by the FBI. The FBI giving on-the-spot security clearance or credentials to Twitter executives and employees. The FBI suppressing information, whether it be COVID-19, election reform, Hunter Biden's laptop, didn't matter. The FBI all but instructing, maybe demanding would be more accurate, that Twitter remove accounts of conservatives, anti-vaxxers, and even anti-election fraud proponents. It's all there. We have seen it, we have heard it, we have read it, and we are shocked and disgusted by it. So where do we go from here? It's apparent that new Twitter owner Elon Musk is determined to change this, at least at Twitter. He's already fired numerous executives, including former FBI and DOJ lawyer James Baker. So what next? And by the way, why is Christopher Wray still the FBI director? Jeez. Okay, tucked to the bottom of several websites. Now, mind you, the attention-grabbing portion up top gives accounting entries and several reasons. They, you know, of course, they're screaming about President Trump's low tax liabilities in the latter part of his presidency. Now, while the headlines play up the amount of taxes he paid in various years, it's a meaningless number, by the way. It's a totally meaningless number. The articles down low on the sites point out that President Trump suffered millions of dollars in business income losses during his final year in office. Now, think about this. Most of it was in hospitality and real estate-based businesses. Why? Well, due to COVID-19 and the pandemic. And yet, Big Left continues to pursue President Trump on multiple levels. One of the latest, the January 6th Inquisition is actually recommending Congress pass a bill that President Trump be barred from ever again holding federal office. Now, look, Hawkeye Mike can't be on the show today. A different Mike will be, by the way, but Hawkeye Mike can't be on today. He's with family for the holidays. We did chat via text. Here are some of his thoughts. First, he says President Trump has not been convicted of anything, including what the January 6th Inquisition has been pursuing. He simply has done nothing to disqualify himself, let alone he wasn't convicted during two sham impeachments. Most important, Hawkeye Mike pointed out, is that the Constitution sets the standards for holding federal office. Congress cannot, on a whim or otherwise, override the U.S. Constitution. In other words, singling out an individual would most likely be laughed out of even the most liberal courts, is how he put it. But should it, for whatever reason, rise all the way to the Supreme Court, it would be overturned. At least one would hope. Here's a bit of a shocker. In a story that appeared on the Blaze website, actor Tim Robbins, Tim Robbins has expressed remorse about turning on the unvaccinated and the unmasked, which included this statement: "We turned into tribal, angry, vengeful people." Like I said, this appeared on the Blaze. It was actually a story taken from Robbins' appearance on Russell Brand's podcast. And I'm going to read some of it because it's really, really interesting. Insightful, really. He explained his journey from strict compliance to one of doubt about the inerrancy of so-called health experts and the official narrative constructed around COVID-19, whether it be vaccination, lockdowns, or masking. He said, despite having initially bought into it and adhering to the requests, he explained his real-life encounters were ultimately at odds with what he had otherwise been told about the pandemic and about protesters and about the unvaccinated. Said when the first pandemic, when the pandemic first came out, he listened to Newsom. He did all the regular stuff. He said he was angry at people that didn't mask up, angry at people that didn't believe in the vax. But he also said he saw thriving areas that were not strictly following statist health protocols when he drove across the U.S. It was not until he visited the United Kingdom that he acknowledged the possibility that he may have been wrong to unquestionably accept the official pandemic narrative. He said in Britain, he noticed a lot of people were not adhering. So they're going to have a hard day. There'll be some serious death. He said, when I saw that there wasn't, I started to wonder more and more about what we were being told and whether it was true or not. Because he said the catastrophe never came to be. Said he went to an anti-lockdown protest in London. He joined, but not because he supported the protest, but because he was kind of curious. Then he saw the way they were being described in the press, and it wasn't true. These were not National Front Nazis. These were liberals and lefties and people who believed in personal freedom. Now, he said, and Brand agreed, that the pandemic was particularly politicized in the U.S. Brand said there's a lot more political ideology at play than is perhaps wise, prudent, or even honest, where the claim is being made that we are following the science. Now, Robbins even admitted, he said, at first, if you were a Democrat when Trump was president, my God, you weren't going to take that vaccine because it was Trump's vaccine. He goes, and then that somehow changed. He goes, it's damn near Orwellian. He goes, it's like we're no longer at war with East Asia. Then he said, after political winds shifted and Democrats assumed power, during the pandemic, he said, if you didn't take the vaccine, you were a Republican. End result, he said, we turned into tribal, angry, vengeful people. He told investigative reporter Matt Taibbi, "I think we lost a lot of ourselves during this time." He said, "I heard people say, if you didn't take the vaccine and got sick, you don't have a right to a hospital bed." He said, "It made him think about returning to a society where we care about each other. Your neighbor would be sick and you'd bring over some soup. It didn't matter what their politics were. You were their effing neighbor." He suggested that those who dehumanize and divide others often think they're being virtuous. And he accepts that he too was swept up into the ranks of the socially destructive. He said, "You go from someone that's inclusive, altruistic, generous, empathetic, to a monster where you want to freeze people's bank accounts because they disagree with you." He goes, "That's a dangerous thing. That's a dangerous world we've created." And he says, "I say we because I was part of that. I bought into that whole idea early on." So, yeah, hell of a shock. Not only saying it was wrong, owning it. Not blaming others. Not saying we were lied to or, you know, none of that. He's just flat out saying, he's just owning it. Tim Robbins. That's damn impressive. It really is. I mean, I'm hardly a Tim Robbins fan in terms of his politics and his social crap. But in terms of his owning it and, you know, why not, you know? Support it. Here's an email I got from Al. I just wanted to read it out because I don't know if he had a chance to talk about it on his show. I don't think he did. Let me read it. "President Biden's illegal alien invasion is a manufactured event designed to give amnesty first and then full voting rights to the 100,000-plus border-jumping lawbreakers. All the crime, human trafficking, Chinese-made fentanyl, and corruption that comes with the Biden illegal alien invasion is on his hands." He says, "Join defendtheborder.org and former acting ICE director Tom Homan as they lead the charge for secure borders." So basically, Al is urging people, please go to defendtheborder.org if you have a problem with what's happening at our border, and you should. We all should. Has nothing to do with empathy. It has nothing to do with where they're from or whatever. Forget the fact that they're not even following. Not even following the law. It's a security issue. It is a security issue. So there we go there. Okay, in a story I shouldn't even be talking about, a three-judge panel of a federal court, New York District Court of Appeals, has thrown out a challenge to Connecticut's policy that allows transgender males, regardless of surgery, hormones, or SNP status, if you will, to compete as and against females. Now, the original story was carried by AP, but put out by the Daily Mail in Great Britain. Federal appeals court dismissed a challenge to Connecticut's policy, blah, blah, blah. They upheld the lower court judge's dismissal of a lawsuit challenging the policy. The panel said the four cisgender athletes lacked standing to sue, in part because their claims that they were deprived of wins, state titles, and athletic scholarship opportunities were speculative. That all four plaintiffs regularly competed at state track championships as high school athletes, where plaintiffs had the opportunity to compete for state titles in different events. And on numerous occasions, plaintiffs were indeed champions, finishing first in various events, even sometimes when competing against transgender athletes. Not true. It says plaintiffs simply have not been deprived of a chance to be champions. These two guys that are running don't even attempt to look like girls. Well, they do the hair, I guess, but that's it. Trans rights activists say it's not about sports. It's about ways to demean and attack transgender youth. It is about sports. As I've said, if you're really going through that upheaval in your life, and that's an upheaval about whether you are a male or female, you really think that hard about wanting to compete in any sport? I mean, I can't believe it. They've literally obliterated Title IX with this. They've obliterated it. Why in hell am I even still having to report or comment on this? On what planet is a state like Connecticut exempt from federal rules and laws like Title IX? How is it that judges can't see the obvious advantage a male athlete has over a female athlete in most sports and sporting events? Steve Day said it 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, a mental disease. It's a mental disease. Seriously, why am I still having to talk about this? But it's sports and politics related at the same time. It's just unbelievable. Really is. Still here. We're still dealing with it. Here's a beaut. Dr. Frodsky testified for 7 hours in a deposition for a case that the attorneys general of Louisiana and Missouri have filed against La Dopi Nostra. In it, the fraud admits he dismissed the possibility of COVID-19 emanating from a lab leak in China in order not to create tension with Red China. Here's some of the article from the Washington Free Beacon as listed by Conservative Review. He stated throughout the deposition that he was troubled by wild speculation and allegations that the Chinese government either deliberately or accidentally leaked the virus from a biological lab in Wuhan. He also said he was afraid that blaming the Chinese would increase tensions and reduce cooperation with Beijing to prevent future pandemics. There was no evidence of that at that time, and that's what I was concerned about. Now, as pointed out, his reluctance to entertain that may have slowed the U.S. government's efforts to investigate the origins of the pandemic. A growing body of evidence does point to a lab leak. And by the way, Fauci now says he's open about it. Now, here's the thing. He not only dismissed it, he and his National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases was funding research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Remember, I said this before the pandemic, when Dr. Charles Lieber of Harvard and several Chinese nationals were arrested for lying to the FBI about their involvement in China, when it started to leak, and then the Ivy League was the first to cancel their basketball tournament. And I said at the time, I said, look, this guy knows something and Harvard knows something. Now, the lawsuit alleges that the Biden administration, La Dopi Nostra, colluded with social media companies to censor politically sensitive content. They've also alleged that Facebook and Twitter, along with the FBI, blocked access to this and other stories. Fauci denied coordinating with social media companies on their virus-related content, but he revealed that his daughter worked as a software engineer at Twitter until last year. And he did say he met with Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg on a campaign to promote the coronavirus vaccines. Folks, that's called double talk. I mean, at its root, it's called lying. But that's double talk. Saying he didn't have anything to do with it, but his daughter worked for Twitter and he met with Zuckerberg. By the way, what was his job? His job was looking out for the health of America, right? For Americans. No matter the cause or the source. He somehow imposes himself into U.S. international policy, a job for which he wasn't being paid, which he probably had very little qualification, if any. God. On a related note, Florida Governor DeSantis is asking the state's Supreme Court to impanel a grand jury to probe any wrongdoing related to COVID-19 vaccines. Now, there is a story. I'm not going to read it because there's not much of a story. Basically, he's asked Supreme Court order to impanel a statewide grand jury. It says Florida law prohibits fraudulent practices, including the dissemination of false or misleading advertisements of a drug and the use of any representation or suggestion in any advertisement relating to a drug, that an application of a drug is effective when it is not. The pharmaceutical industry has a notorious history of misleading the public for financial gain. It says an investigation is warranted to determine whether the pharmaceutical industry is engaged in fraudulent practices. This is one reason I do not want him running for president in 2024. The state of Florida desperately needs his leadership. And indeed, why wouldn't we push forward vaccines, show bias for or against certain treatments, and worst of all, indemnify drug companies that produce both of those as a blanket policy? How absurd is that? I mean, there were ways to not absolve them per se, but there were ways to get them, to spur them on without giving them both the keys and the backup combination, or the combination and the backup keys to the safe. It just doesn't make sense. Why would we indemnify like that? I just don't get it. North Carolina Supreme Court has upheld a ruling from a lower court that a voter ID law is discriminatory. Now, they're not saying voter ID laws are discriminatory. They're saying this particular law was discriminatory. I don't know how. When I read the story, I'm not sure what's discriminatory about it. They're saying it's because African Americans have less access to ID. Said they enacted it with discriminatory intent. The problem is right now the vote is 4-3 Democrat justices versus Republicans. Now, in the next session, it's going to be the opposite. It's going to be 5-2. The voters also voted for this, by the way. You've noticed courts have a habit lately of overturning voters after the fact. In other words, the vote's held, then they overturn it. And they usually use this crap like, well, until it happens, we can't overturn it. Well, if something doesn't pass constitutional muster, it shouldn't even be on the ballot. Am I wrong there? Where's the disconnect there? But anyway, they have said they will recraft it necessary, and that's what they're going to do. So final story or stories. The Supreme Court is set to hear the Brunson versus Adams case, which theoretically they say could overturn the 2020 election and make legislators who voted to certify the election without allowing any audit subject to removal and barring any federal office thereafter. It would supposedly include Dopey Joe and his installed vice president. Now, whether or not any of this actually happens is another matter. If I were forced to guess, I'd say they would issue statements or advisory. There's no way they will overturn the 2020 election at this point. I'm not even sure they should. U.S. representatives elected at that time, they have all faced re-election. In fact, so have some of the senators. So don't get your hopes up. In Arizona, Carrie Lake's lawsuit is also going forward, despite Secretary of State and presumed Governor Katie Hobbs' attempts to thwart it. Again, don't hold your breath here. But in a real sense, this isn't about overturning elections. about bringing to light election fraud. Now, if you remember Karma Girl back in 2021 from Arizona, worked the Maricopa County audit from the 2020 election, and she talked about, she said, this isn't something new. She said, fraud is rampant. Manipulation of ballots is rampant. So we have to get to the bottom of it. It's not about overturning elections. It's about making sure it doesn't happen again. Now, before we go to break, and I'll bring on my buddy, Histrionic Avid Mike. I call him Histrionic Mike in my phone because he's different than Hawkeye Mike. I should rephrase it as Avid. Anyway, before I bring him on, I'm going to take a break, but get some more internet laughy from the Babylon Bee. This one's really good. It says, following Kyrsten Sinema's exit, Mitt Romney announces intention to remain a Democrat. Love it. Another one. Department of Justice arrests Sam Bankman-Fried for running out of bribery money. That one's good. Elon Musk buys Santa's workshop, reveals emails showing how naughty and nice lists work. Oh, okay. We're going to go to break, then I'll come back with a couple laughies, and then I will bring on my buddy Mike, and we're going to talk some sports. In the meantime, it's Christmas season, so enjoy a Christmas song. Jones, you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports. And we are back from our break to dial in and listen. Of course, dial 319-527-6706. If you've got a question you want to talk, hit the 1. Simple as that. A couple more internet laughies. In a huge Black Friday sale, a store announces it will sell all items at the price they were before Dopey Joe became president. Another one. New Elf on the Shelf will scan your social media accounts to see if you misgendered anyone. Let's see. Harry and Meghan announced Netflix special about how much they want privacy. In an address in remembrance of Pearl Harbor, Vice President Kamala Harris urges the nation not to forget January 6th. Oh, God. And President Trump brags that he is the first president to lose the Senate while not president. Okay, we'll get to sports real quick, and then I'm going to bring Mike in a second. In a twist of the semi-bizarre but not so bizarre on reflection, new Colorado head coach Deion Sanders went straight to the point at his first meeting with the team. The message was basically, transfer! Basically, he's telling the group, by the way, that went 1-11 this past season, to enter the transfer portal, and the more that enter means the more of his own players he can bring in. Now, this may actually work to a degree, but it's not for the reasons you think. First, don't think for a single second that a white coach would get away with this. I hate to say it, but I'm saying it. A white coach would never get away with this. Can you imagine Nick Saban telling black players to leave? By the way, more on Saban and Bama later. Further, if thinks bringing in all his own players from an FCS school will be enough to compete in a Power 5 conference, he's kind of crazy. His team couldn't even finish out their season undefeated. Yes, he has his quarterback son, and he thinks he's bringing Jackson State star defensive back Travis Hunter. By the way, at 165 pounds, Travis Hunter may find the likes of Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA. Backfields, quarterbacks, not to mention tight ends and offensive linemen, a bit larger and better than his previous opponents at the FCS level. Not to mention, by the way, Travis Hunter has had conversations with Georgia head coach Kirby Smart. USC and others are in the mix, so he's not even a done deal to Colorado. So, look, while it's a great publicity stunt, will bring much-needed visibility to their football program, hold off for now on declaring them into next year's college football playoff. In college basketball, your number one ranking this week goes to the Purdue Boilermakers, currently at an 11-0. Connecticut is 12-0. They're number two. The only other undefeated team in the top 25 is 11-0 Mississippi State at number 15. Other Big Ten teams in the top 25 are Illinois, Wisconsin, and Indiana. Maryland, Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa are all getting votes. Maryland actually makes the rankings in the coaches' poll, replacing Arizona State. Purdue has some good to seriously good wins. Marquette, West Virginia, Gonzaga, Florida State. They got conference wins over Minnesota and Nebraska. Meanwhile, the Hawkeyes are without Chris Murray right now. And when I wrote this earlier, I said they won't need him for tonight against Eastern Illinois. Turns out they did. Hawks lost to 3-9 Eastern Illinois by 9 points. Embarrassing, I know. A few developments in college football this week, and I'm going to bring in Mike right now. And let's get him on. Mike, you there? Mike, are you there? Mike, you there? Not hearing you.
There we go. I had myself muted also.
Oh, okay, cool. So, a couple developments that are related to everyone. First, there's this provision in Congress this week, which I think is good, allows athletes from the service academies to pursue with waivers. That's a good one. Army's got a linebacker that's probably going to be drafted. But here's another one, and I want your opinion on this. The NCAA has granted a one-year exemption for players to play in bowl games this season without affecting their redshirt capability. is this, in your opinion, is this just a one-off, or do you think we're going to have – you think this is a slippery slope that gets the bowl season out?
I think this is a product of the transfer portal. Think about
yeah.
it. Look at all these schools. I mean, we'll use Iowa as an example. We've lost our two top quarterbacks. We've lost the entire wide receiver group. And you're having to play players that, you know, got to their four games and then were supposed to have their, you know, still be able to redshirt. So some of these teams are going to be forced to play players.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be the new norm. I think it's because of the NIL, the portal, all these things that are changing, you know, amateur sports to more professional sports that
yeah.
you're going to have more and more exemptions made.
Yeah, I'm just not sure it does much for non-New Year's Six bowl games is what, you know. I mean, case in point, though, Purdue, you know, Charlie Jones
you know,
totally abandons the Iowa program, which whatever, but he's sitting out. This is their biggest bowl game since, like, what, like 10 years at least. And he's sitting in their quarterback.
Longer than that.
Yeah, he's sitting it out. Their quarterback is sitting it out. I mean,
yep, Aiden.
Does it surprise you that these guys are doing this more and more? I mean, for a game that I think is somewhat big, does it surprise? I mean, were you surprised to see that? Those particular ones.
You know, those two, yes, I'm very surprised because all they can do is improve their draft stock by playing in the game, more game footage. But you know, you see Bryce. From Alabama, he's going to play. He doesn't have to do anything. It's not an important game. It's not a you know, the championship, you know, the playoffs. So
right.
It's just a weird – it doesn't – to me, it doesn't equate because I think it's more – they've only got one – well, Charlie's only got really one year – one really good year and one good punting year of film, you know, punting
yeah.
term of film. So – I would say getting more and then going like to the Senior Bowl and stuff like that. You know, this may mean they may not even play in the Senior Bowl for either of them. So,
yeah, I didn't think about that. You know, are guys going to do that? I mean, here, what do you? I mean, what's it going to? If you were, what would you do? If it were your, you know, what would you do to keep interest? Not necessarily from seniors. I kind of get seniors, but draft eligible players that you know. You know, like Tyler Goodson last year is an example. Tyler actually was, which was not talked about during the season, he had rib injuries. He wasn't going to, you know, mm-hmm. there was nothing more he could do at Iowa, but he had rib injuries, so there was no point for him risking it in that game. Tyler Linderbaum played, and he actually had a minor injury. So, you know, there's so many stories all going in different ways. But, I mean, how do we keep interest then in some of these, you know, non-New Year's Six bowls, but even last year you had guys sit out New Year's Six bowls. What is it going to take, do you think, to keep this?
You know, and it's going to be horrible, but it's going to take the collectives, the NILs, to say, hey, we want you to play in this game. This is a bonus you're going to get to play in this. I think it's going to come down to something like that. Or, you know, a conference thing saying, hey, you know, if you want to be considered for all conference, you have to play the entire season, start announcing that stuff in January, you know, and things like that. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's not like you can say, hey, it's going to be better for you, like I said earlier, with the game film stuff, but
yeah.
I just don't know. I mean, it's going to come down to NIL. I really think it is. That's the money. You're like, hey, there's your interseason bonus. If we make a bowl game and you stay and not, you know, go to the portal or not go to the portal, but go and, you know, sit out because you know, we want you to be there.
You raised that point, and that was my next question in a sense was, do you think the collectives would do it? And from this standpoint, I mean, I guess to put it this way, because it's obviously these collectives aren't what NIL was about. You know, you thought NIL was
right.
going to be Dave's car lot, you know, a big car lot, say, in Cedar Rapids or outside Columbus, is, you know, getting mileage out of this. Well, obviously that's not what happened. I don't see any appearances. I don't see ads and all that stuff. Now, again, we're not in Iowa City, but, you know, we're in Orlando area, and we're not seeing it here. I can't think of anything with UCF players. You know, but I mean, if it were that, what which originally was intended, I think I would have seen it. I would have seen, you know, Ace, the local Ace Hardware, saying, "Hey, wait a second, you know, Billy, you know, I'm not paying for you. You know, I'm not giving you NIL money to sit out games. You know, I'm giving you NIL money because I get mileage out of using your name to say, you know, the local Ace Hardware is proud to sponsor little Billy, who's, by the way, playing in the Citrus Bowl this coming week." I mean, that's, right. You know, that's the kind of thing I was expecting.
Free advertising.
You know. Yeah. I mean, that would have been a way to increase it. I mean, that's the other problem with NIL, I think, is that I'm not sure it has anything to do with name, image, and likeness anymore.
No, all it is the legalization of things that used to get schools the death penalty. I mean, this is pony excess. If you ever watch that 30 for 30, what they did now then is what is being done now, and it's actually allowed. So that's all it is. And that's why.
Except that the schools aren't doing it. It's still boosters, but now boosters are legally doing it. Yeah, that's what it boils down to.
Yeah,
look at the other side, though.
It's what they've always done.
Yeah, look at the other side, though. Jack Campbell, Big Ten linebacker of the year, Big Ten defensive player of the year, Butkus Award winner, he's going to play in the Music City Bowl. He literally has no reason to play in the Music City Bowl. Zero. And yet he's going to. I mean, like you said, Bryce Young, but I think Bryce Young isn't going to the draft this year. Or is he? Is he planning to go to the draft?
Yeah, he's probably going to be the number one pick.
Oh, I didn't realize that. So, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then there's something to it. And we're going to get to Bama later, of course. Okay, let's get to it. National Signing Day. By the way, have you been seeing how's the rest of our class coming in? Is everybody else that's supposed to come on board
on
board?
Everybody, all 21 have made it except for the elephant in the room, you know, that decided to go to the elephant.
Right, okay. So let's get to this. Caden Proctor, he announced yesterday that he is going, instead of Iowa, he's going to Alabama. So read that quote that you sent me earlier. I mean, I want to hear, I mean, read if what he said.
Yeah, hold on just a second. Let me bring it back up. Let me go back into my phone. When asked if he why he decided to join Nick Saban in Alabama rather than staying at home, the 6'7", 330-pound tackle exclaimed, "I thought I was settling at Iowa."
I mean, you know, here's the thing about this statement. I know we talked yesterday by text and said, you know, if he comes back, we welcome him with open arms. I think he's burned bridges to Iowa City.
Oh, God,
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if things don't work out in Tuscaloosa.
Here's an update to this. I got an update on this.
Okay.
Just to give you a little more insight. He was part of his NIL that he had already kind of signed with the Swarm Collective. He was given a Jeep over the summer.
Oh, really?
He took it to the – He took it to the lot. Texted the owner that it's on the lot and that he no longer needed it. And this is the same thing he did with the Iowa coaches. He texted them Sunday night saying that he was his commitment from Iowa to Alabama. So just, you know, long string of, you know, showing how much, you know, his word is worth.
Well, and not only that, I mean, it's alarming that this kid could have been in Iowa City. I mean, I know we would his potential, because he hasn't done anything yet. You know, that's another thing. He hasn't done a thing. So, but, and here's the other thing. He says it wasn't about NIL and what he's getting at Alabama isn't really that much. Well, first of all, Nick Saban said last year, we don't pay players. That's why we're at such a disadvantage. He said last year, we don't pay players. Now we're hearing it wasn't much more. But if you listen to people from the Swarm are telling us we got to pony up because we're going to lose guys like Caden Proctor. You know, so there's that disconnect. But basically, you know, but we mentioned before about, you know, if he doesn't work out there, what is your feeling on guys, I mean, in general, on guys that shunned the Hawkeyes, if they decide later they want to transfer in? I mean, what's your thought about it?
This one is just to the core because there's not much difference. I mean, yes, it's Alabama. I will give credit that Alabama is who Alabama is. But when it comes to the production of offensive line in the NFL, they're not much different. If you look at it, X's and O's. The path was quicker to get to the NFL from Iowa because he didn't have to sit behind other people. He was penciled in as a right tackle or even the left tackle next year. So him, no way in the world. Other ones, you can't fault for saying, hey, I was offered by Alabama, or I was offered by Ohio State, or I was offered by, you know, Clemson. And, you know, you can't fault that as long as they don't statement like that, that just basically disparages the other school.
Yeah. Well, it actually gets worse. He actually said he didn't want to be where he's already thought of as the best player. He wants to have to earn it and be knocked around in the box. First of all, that's an insult to any former to prospective teammates that he had and friends.
Yeah.
It's a real, I mean, well, I'm already the best. Really? You haven't even stepped on campus yet. And you're saying you're already the best. You don't want to have to be the best already, you know?
My answer to that one is there is a long list of five-star people that have failed in college.
Yeah.
That have self-proclaimed them to being the best, you know?
Yeah.
So more power to you,
I'm just not sure we want to deal with these people a second time. And, I he's from Iowa, so, you know, if something happens, you know, you welcome him back. But supposedly Iowa State would never be an option. It isn't an option. You know, so if he came back home, so to speak, but I don't think he will. I know we joke. I say, you know, it won't bother me if he blows out of the, I don't wish that on any kid. I mean, that's a terrible thing to wish.
No,
but by the same token, I really don't care what happens to a kid like this. And I'm really, in a sense, glad, because that's that kind of toxicity in a locker room, I'm sorry, that spills over. People say, oh, no, they rate. No, they don't. His friends are reading that. You know, his teammates or prospective teammates are reading that. And, you know, the implication is that he's going to be playing behind better guys than Alabama. But, again, if you read stories, Alabama has lost several guys to the portal, including offensive linemen.
Already.
So there is, yeah.
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, if it's just to me, there's something. Again, if this happened in, you know, Ross Pierce, everybody compares it to Ross Pierschbacher. Ross Pierschbacher did it in August, before the 2013 season. You know, he did not leave us hanging.
And his girlfriend, or was it his girlfriend or sister, was already there. So there is at least a tie to the school. Yeah.
But yeah, in this case, you know, days before. Now he says he let the coaches know last week. But still, you know, a week isn't exactly, you know, time to get guys in the pipeline. Now, this is not unique to us. You know, Oregon lost a quarterback last week to UCLA. They then poached the number 14 overall defensive back, safety, from Notre Dame. And then they also got a four-star quarterback from Baylor. But, you know, we have a pretty good class, though. And Proctor would have made it better, but how much? And like I said, given his statements, as well as some of the statements made by his quote inner circle, he certainly doesn't seem real mature. So like I say, I think we might have ended up dodging a bullet. But talk about some of the other guys in our class.
Yeah, we have other
linemen. So tell us about some of the other linemen.
Yeah, Lauk. He's a kid out of, I want to say, the Indianapolis area. He's four-star tackle.
Yeah, Trevor Lauk.
Trevor Lauk. Yeah, Lauk or Lauk. Is that how you say it? L-A-U-C-K.
It looks like Lauk. Yeah, it looks like Lauk. Yeah.
Yeah. He just played in, well, now the Army All-American game this last week. And from what I saw on footage, he went up against a lot of four- and five-star defensive ends and held his own. So I think we're going to be in great shape with him. We also got another center that's going to be coming in that pretty high-ranked. Let me look at the list as I'm talking about it so that I'm not just spouting.
I know. I'm trying to pull the
information.
List up.
Yeah, but that's Leighton Jones. But
yeah,
Leighton Jones. A three-star, pretty high, you know, three-star, you know, Knicks centers, they just never that way. Kind of the cool thing we got just, what is it, yesterday, we got the commit from Washington Jr. out of Wiley, Texas. He's an athlete that had been committed to Purdue. And with the coaching change, he opened it back up, and he's kind of he could play running back. He his junior year, he rushed for like 1,100 yards and 22 touchdowns. The big knock on him going into his senior year is that he didn't catch the ball well enough. So what's he do?
Right.
He goes and catches for 600 plus yards and 24 touchdowns with rushing. So kind of that bigger, faster version of Arlen Bruce coming in is what a lot of people are comparing him to, because he could play, you know, both a running back or the wide, you know, split out as a wide receiver. So
yeah, we also got a really big kid out of Illinois, Cannon Leonard, 6'9", 265.
Yeah. that's kind of Kirk's starter kit for tackles. You know, you're thinking back in the days of God, what was his name? Well, I'm pulling blanks on you tonight, sir, on some names, but
Herb
I'm
Lester.
Back, I played for the Raiders with the Raiders forever, deep as offensive tackle for Iowa.
Gallery.
Yeah, Gallery, kind of in that same starter mode because he was a tight end in high school. So
I mean, looking at the list of 21 recruits, the class of 21, there's only one 2-star. Everybody else is 3 or 4 stars. So this isn't exactly that one.
No, it's a great class, and what I like about it is it's athletic and big at certain positions. We needed to get bigger at wide receiver in particular. You know, you look at, we got 3 wide receivers and they're all 6'1" to 6'5".
Yeah.
So, or 6'4". So, I mean, that's a huge, I mean, that room's decimated after this last, you know, the portal and everything. So,
yeah, that's going to, now is Kenny Merriweather, he's not related to Kayvon Merriweather, is he?
No. Okay. Even though they're both from they're both from the same area in Michigan,
yeah.
They're not related.
Okay. So, I think you have to, like they say, you have to support the guys that wanted to be here, you know?
Yeah.
So what one change would you make to NIL? If you were, you know, you're in charge now,
wow,
what's the one change you would make to NIL to from its current status?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I've got a lot of different, like, crazy ideas out there. But things that would actually make a change to it would be – put me on the spot here.
Well, I'm just saying, just pick a chip.
I don't know. I think you need to have something with the actual universities being part of it. Right now, everything has to be separate.
Yeah.
And that would make it – that would legitimize it by putting the school as part of it. I know, you know, some schools would still, you know, throw tons of money in it, but it just seems like as of right now, you don't know where the money's coming from.
Yeah.
You know, Oregon, it's coming from Nike. You know, whoever, you know, some of the blue bloods, you know, it's going to be coming from all the millionaires or billionaires that are, you know, Texas, for example.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of times where the money is actually coming from, very dark, you know, you don't know.
Yeah.
And because there's been,
yeah,
you know, a lot,
like,
of these,
it's almost like politics
donations.
Money. It's almost like politics money.
Yeah. Well, that's
question.
Very much the same. In the same print, it definitely runs parallel to all the slippery slopes that you can get into as what, you know, how you do your campaign contributions or your NIL contributions now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's several things. One, I think they have to be, I think everything's got to be right out there. I mean, it's got to be able to be seen. It's not one of these things where you should have to go do a deep dive. I mean, I think it should be like, you know, Joe Schmo signed an NIL deal today, whether it's with a swarm or was, you know, and this is it. It's on the website, and it's been submitted to the school and the NCAA, and this is what it's for. I mean, to just simply say he's got an NIL deal worth $900,000. Well, for what? I mean, what is a kid doing for $900,000? So I think there's got to be some kind of transparency. The other thing I might say is no NIL deals until a kid has remained academically eligible for either a semester or a season or whatever. You know what I mean? I mean, you're having kids come in who are – some kids who aren't even of age to sign a contract when they're first getting them, you know. And they're signing NIL. There's something really crazy about that. So that's one.
Well,
so
here's the thing. That aspect will never fly because of the college basketball, the one and dones. I mean, those kids stay eligible for the first semester to play the second semester, and then they're gone, the ones that are going to be there for the one and done. So
Yeah, but I mean, you can't – football is different, so you got to, you know. Okay, now make a change to the –
it's going to be a blanket statement for across all sports. I mean
– Yeah, make a change to the transfer – make a change to the transfer portal.
Yeah. Do you want it to go back the way it was?
I'm not saying if you do,
like,
I mean,
sit out a year.
Yeah, that's a thought. I mean, that's one of another one I would say, it's timing. Before bowl games, that's insane. You know, I mean, I think if a kid says I'm not going to play, I'm entering the transfer portal, you know, fine. But I just think the timing has got to change. You know, having
one month going to hurt everybody to wait till January 7th instead of December 7th for it. There's no difference. There really isn't.
Yeah, I mean, for a kid saying,
if anything,
well,
it's more footage for some of these kids.
Yeah, I mean, to say I want to get enrolled at my new school, that's, you know, that's the thing. I mean, we've created unlimited free agency. How about recruiting rule? What's a rule you would change there? I mean, for me, it would be a signing period. But take one recruiting rule and change it. What would you change?
I think the dead periods need to go away. The simple fact of it, this day and age, you know, everybody is – there are ways around it with Twitter, texting, whatever you want to use. Just get rid of it so that it's just open season all year round with it. The dead periods, all they do are the teams that follow it are the ones that are burned, and the teams who don't are the ones who benefit from it. So that's me. I've always been – for the last few years, it's just been like – it just needs to go away because it does not. I don't think it does anything to benefit, you know, the student athlete that could be, you know, being recruited.
Yeah, exactly. I would agree. I think the other thing though is there's got to be some kind of a timing change. I mean, this early signing period like this. Now there's another signing period, so that's fine. But I think this one happening when it's happening doesn't make sense. It's coinciding with the portal, and they think it's probably good, but I think some of it's got to coincide. I mean, for instance, one thing I would do with Portal, and I would tie it to NIL somehow, is I would simply say, if this is really about, you know, because the one thing that's happening, NIL is being used as an inducement for transfers. I mean, we've heard the stories that, you know, I think it was either Utah offered or somebody offered a kid at Utah, without him being in the portal, offered him $1 million to transfer, supposedly. Now, I don't know how true that is, but I'm certainly no reason to call the kid out on it. That's got to stop. I mean, NIL cannot be used as a, you know, I mean, just there's something that doesn't make sense there. But the other thing I would think is, look, if you're really serious about this, I mean, one thing Caden Proctor says is the facilities, the dorms, the team doctors, really? God, you know,
yeah.
I mean, where would you rather be if you have a problem? University of Iowa hospitals or somewhere in Tuscaloosa. I can tell you where I'm wanting to be. It ain't Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but that just sounds insane to even say that. That's just stupid. But one thing I would say is if it's really about this, tie it so that a kid that transfers, if he wants immediate NIL, that he doesn't get immediate playing time. If he wants to be eligible immediately, he is ineligible for NIL for a period of 1 year. Now, grad transfer, you might treat it differently, but I don't see why not. You know, if it's really not about the money, then you don't mind sitting
a
year.
It's about playing time or opportunities, yeah.
Yeah, then you don't mind not getting NIL for a year. I mean, take Justin Jacobs, who's coming off an injury. I mean, he was literally out for the season. And, you know, somehow he's entered the portal and already is at Oregon. Now, one thing I talked about with the other Mike, Hawkeye Mike, he was my roommate in college. Justin Jacobs isn't an Iowa boy. You know, he's from Ohio. I mean, he had offers from Ohio State and stuff. So it's not like this isn't a hometown kid. He feels no real love for the state, so to speak. But by the same token, I just think, you know, something's wrong there. Here's another thing I thought of. Do you remember we used to recruit a lot of kids from Glenville, Ohio?
Yeah.
And that sort of seems to have dried up. I'm not sure if it's a matter of circumstance or if there's a lack of trust somewhere or whatever. You think that's going to affect
– Well, we had that one father there that was really – you know, he liked us. And I don't think he's part of that. He used to have that traveling team.
That was Ted Ginn Jr.'s father.
Yeah, and he actually – because he's the one who told DJK to come to us.
Yeah.
So –
but, yeah, I just wonder if there was something there that – I mean, do you think I can't imagine that – who is – Caden Proctor's high school coach, is his stepfather one of his high school coaches?
Don't know. I really don't.
Because I got to believe that that's got to have
fanatical,
some
effect. But not that fanatical.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I get it. But I just – it just seems to me something is really, you know, off with that whole thing. But it is what it is. So,
I mean, have you heard the latest on NC State's quarterback? The money that's been supposedly thrown around for him? Well, Narduzzi from Pitt. The coach there, he came on one of the talk shows earlier this week and says he's not going to say the schools, but there has been two offers from that kid from NC State for $5 million to go to their school and NIL money. Two separate offers for $5 million. Do you think there's a system is broke?
Yeah, big time, obviously. I mean, I don't even know how that's – it's mind-boggling. How are we going to get past some of that, you know?
I mean, I'm sorry, not North Carolina State. North Carolina's Drake May. $5 million offers to transfer. I mean, it's just crazy.
And is he or not?
There's been no resolution to it.
Has he entered the portal?
Not that I know of. I didn't think he was in. That's why I was referencing the NC State kid, because I knew he was in the portal.
Yeah. I'm really shocked, by the way, that Notre Dame's starting quarterback entered the portal.
Yeah, and he got better as the season went on, too.
He's
so it wasn't
Arizona
a situation.
State.
Yeah, and let's not even get started on Arizona State and how bad of a situation that is after Herm Edwards.
Yeah.
So...
there's just been some real – I mean, this whole thing is just really getting crazy. Okay, so we were talking about earlier of bowl games. Have you watched any of the bowl games yet?
I have, because as you – what did you call me earlier? Not Hawkeye
Avid,
Mike, but you called me –
Avid Mike and Histrionic Mike, but Avid is more probably
I like Loud Mike better, I just can't get enough football, literally – I mean, I didn't watch my Vikings almost lose and come back to Colts on Sunday, but I watched the game yesterday because I just needed to see it. So I've been watching all the bowl games so far. Watched Western Iowa win the junior college championship.
Really?
That's how bad it is. Yeah.
I honestly can't remember a time when I was so disinterested in the bowl. I mean, when I was a kid – and all the way through, I used to pretty much watch all of them. I mean, like, I remember getting home, because when I was in college, they didn't start during school, you know. I mean, they didn't start, you know, the second week of December. Yeah, but they started, you know, like, right by the time we were getting home from Christmas break. And I started watching them that first weekend, you know. I mean, I was excited about it. I loved it. I've never been less excited than I am this year. I think it's partly because guys are sitting out. You know, we had 5-7 Rice in a bowl, which is not the first time that's happened, but, you know, that kid from Coastal Carolina that's in the transfer portal. I mean, there's that kind of stuff happening.
And that came up late. That was like Thursday or Friday of last week, you know, almost 2 weeks into the portal time. So,
yeah, but that, is that not because his Hugh Freeze got the Auburn job. So his coach took the Liberty job, so I think that's what happened there. And frankly, you know, that's the other side of it. You know, when I sit there and look at Charlie Jones and Aiden O'Connell, I would say, God, you little ingrates, you selfish little bastards. But, you know, their coach, they literally found out their coach was leaving by text. I mean, the same way, you know, and again, why are we mad at Caden Proctor when the coach of a Big Ten team is texting his players to say he's leaving? You know, I'm not sure why I'm so mad about Caden Proctor doing that, given that, you know, Jeff Brohm. So, you know, maybe overall they're getting what they deserve. I don't know. I mean, knowing Jeff Brohm, he's probably trying to get an exemption for those guys to play for Louisville in their bowl, although I think Louisville's already played. But, I mean, that's how
they did.
You know,
they blew out. Yeah.
That's how much I think of Jeff Brohm. But I just, you know, I can't get into them. I just, have there been any good games, really?
North Texas was a good game. I'm trying to remember who they played. That ended up going right down to the wire. A lot of them have been pretty one. I mean, look at Oregon State and Florida over the weekend.
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
just – that was pathetic on Florida's count. I mean, there's footage of their defensive end in the third quarter just standing up and maybe taking a step forward and not even trying to rush the quarterback to do anything. It was just a pathetic – it was just – that should never even been televised, that game.
Yeah. And that's what's going to get them canceled, though, too. I mean, you know
– Yeah.
At a certain point, you know, it's not the Orange Bowl. I mean, if you're ReliaQuest, I mean, that's a, still sort of a major bowl. But, I mean, if you're the Poulan Weed Eater sponsor, so to speak, do you really want to keep sponsoring that kind of stuff, you know? I'm not sure
yeah.
that, you know, at a certain point they're going to say, you know what, we can spend our money better ways. We really don't need all these free tickets to this crappy bowl.
Look at how much we've had change in sponsorship over the last few years. I think that's an indication. I mean, look at one that's near and dear to us. We've been to it a million times. You know, we still call it the Outback Bowl, but now it's the ReliaQuest Bowl because
yeah.
I think there was a waning of interest, you know, of,
yeah.
you know, that nobody was really – I mean, I've been to that game almost every time they've gone, and every year I went, there was less and less from
yeah.
– I mean, I'll even say it, even from the Iowa people going to it, you know, even
yeah.
though we're, you know, we're one of the best travelers for bowl games. And you hit the nail on the head. I think that's going to become – but I think that'll also be a byproduct of if we ever go to super conferences, too. You know, if the Big Ten and the SEC keep, you know, expanding to 20 or more, that'll be the byproduct of it. You'll just basically have a 2014 playoff between those two conferences and or something like that
yeah.
or 12, you know, something that – then that's your bowl season. And if you want to go to one of the, you know, play something else or – I just don't think it'll be – it'll be back where it was, where there was only a handful of bowls, you know? What was
yeah.
that in the 50s and 60s? There was like 10 bowl games.
Even into the 70s. I mean, you know, it wasn't until the latter
yeah.
half of the 70s that suddenly you started having all these other bowls. But, you know, yeah, it's going to be – I think that's going to happen. I mean, I think, you know, the super conference – it's why I wonder, you know, Justin Jacobs is an example going to Oregon. I mean, the Pac-12 starting, you know, not this
we're
coming season, but – the yeah. So something's up that you know, because I can't imagine that it didn't occur to him that, you know, I might be going to a team that whose conference is pretty much nothing. I can't believe, you know, on the other hand, look,
the
lure...
Go ahead.
What? No, go ahead.
I said, like, for Justin Jacobs or anybody that's going to Oregon, it's just the allure of Nike. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be, you know, a Nike person. They're all Nike.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at just across college football in general. I mean, it's almost – it's probably a 70, maybe a 60% Nike, and then everybody else is amongst, you know, Under Armour, Adidas,
right.
and all the other smaller, you know. So I think it's just the allure of being a Nike person. I think that's the biggest
yeah.
thing. Because it's not like Oregon's great. I mean, they're great, and they show up early in seasons or do things in the end, but they're never really there at the end, except for that one year with Mariota.
Yeah,
so.
And of course they lost that one to Ohio State, so that was
mm-hmm.
you know
that
was
Ohio State or Auburn.
No, Ohio State 2014.
Yeah, you're right.
Season.
Yeah, 2014. I was thinking prior to that. Yep.
So yeah, I mean it's just you know, and you're right. That could be part of it. And again, you know, maybe he just didn't feel. I don't understand the defensive side. I mean, who's the other? We lost Terry Roberts.
Yeah,
any other defensive guys?
He made some interesting comments about how he was treated and stuff like that. So
by who?
That he was just a body or something like that. I don't get that one.
Yeah, I don't either. Oh, and he doesn't have a new destination yet, right? I'm pretty sure.
No. Everybody speculates it's going to be Penn State, but I mean, if it was going to happen, it was going to happen, you know, now.
Yeah.
Most of them – I went back through and I looked at the last few years of players that have left a lot of schools, and I think the number is right around 60% find a new school, and 40% are just, you know, basically done when they go in the portal. And a very
yeah.
small percentage of that 40% actually went back to their school. So – that they were trying to transfer out of.
Yeah. I mean, my worry for him, and I don't get his attitude because he's been treated as a hero by most people. But he's also been treated as a hero for mainly for his special teams play. And you know what? I'm not so sure that the portal is that there's really a place in the portal for a special teams guy / fifth defensive back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that,
I mean,
that would be
off of the forced fumble at Iowa State last year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he lived off of. And he has off the chart athleticism, but that doesn't always mean that you're going to.
Yeah. His punt coverage and stuff. But I mean, he hasn't been he's never made any real noise as a defensive back. So, I mean, I worry about guys like that. You know, Josh Volk, offensive lineman, he's not going to end up anywhere, you know.
He's
going to
end up at like D2 or something, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even list all nine guys that have entered the portal, you know. That's
Yeah.
But
a couple of defensive players and mostly that wide receiver round, so.
Yeah, so Jacobs has got a home, and Keegan Johnson's got a home, which shocked me that it was not Nebraska. You know, I mean, I don't, you know, because you had pointed out that you thought Bruce would be the one that would end up at Kansas State. But here it's Keegan Johnson, and I haven't seen anything from Bruce, you know.
Yeah, because he's from Overland Park originally, so it made sense. That would be, you know, a perfect destination. And he hasn't really, I mean, I think he visited, what was it? He's visited Mississippi State, right, this week? Or last week, I think, was his major place that he's visited. But you would think if he was going to make a decision, it'd be coming up pretty quickly. But, you know,
how are these guys – when was school out? Because I'm under the impression it would have been out sometime last week. So why are these guys able to do in-season visits and stuff? That's what I don't understand also.
And I don't know. Maybe they're in a situation where they have enough completed of the coursework where they don't have to worry about – it could be the same situation where they're still considered a football player and they can do their finals, you know, remotely, which, you know, a lot of these schools went to that during 2020.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, true. I guess that makes sense. But, yeah, I just don't, you know,
I got a couple of funny things I wanted to bring up to you. I hadn't texted you yet. Have you heard the fun journey of Cam McCormick at Oregon?
No.
This is a kid that was granted – okay, this is per ESPN. Cam McCormick was granted a ninth year of eligibility by the NCAA.
How?
Nine years. So here's his timeline. Redshirted as a 2016, redshirt freshman in 2017, season-ending injury in 2018, 2019 missed season injury, COVID year, 2020, 2021 season-ending injury, senior as a 2022. Granted his 23 and his 24 year by the NCAA. Is it not broken? Let's not bring up Drew Rodd in this situation, but I'm going to. Who was deserving of an extra year?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And this guy is getting 9 years of eligibility, and he's never hardly played.
Well, take the guy at Minnesota, Drew Ottman. Is it Ottman? Chris Ottman Bell? Who was applying
their quarterback, Morgan. He was on his sixth year this year.
No, but Drew Ottman Bell is applying. If the injured this year, Chris Ottman Bell is applying for a seventh year.
Wow.
How has that happened? I mean,
it's broken.
Yeah, it's broken.
Here's the other one. Here, have you heard about this? You know, we all know who JT Daniels is, quarterback originally at USC. He now transferred to his fourth school. You already talked about him. Rice.
Yeah.
He'll be playing football at Rice next year. Is that not insane?
He went from USC to...
Here, I've got the article.
And then he was recently, most
Georgia.
Recently at Western.
He got beat out. Georgia
out
to
Georgia.
West Virginia, now to Rice. It's a broken... College football went from being the pillar of what football could be to being broken.
Literally, 1970s electric football is more entertaining now.
The Mattel handheld, where you're just pushing the little cursor around the screen.
You mean where you go up on the top level and just sit there and literally stall for a whole half and then score at the end?
Yeah. Well, you know, no, this was the little one. It was just the little light diode that
but
was
I mean, you would, yeah, but I'm saying you would maneuver it, and then you would sit at the top level
and then just stall
and just wait. And then, like, if they came after you, you'd move down, and then you'd run a couple more. But you'd basically sit on the top level.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, I
know. And you could literally stall for a whole half before, and then score.
Yeah.
That was like,
remember, I'm a Nintendo kid era, so I'm, you know, just weaving with Bo Jackson and Tecmo Bowl. So
yeah, no, I was you know, electric football. That was a thing. We'd set up flying wedges for our team, and then we'd try to hide the ball.
Fine.
Like, put a guy out on the flank at the end and hide the ball. And then, of course, he'd end up spinning around anyway and going backward.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's literally – it's no less legitimate. I mean
– no.
How is it – I mean, ninth year. That's just
– yeah, it does not – it's insane. He's going to be 27 – he's graduated yet. But he's going to be 27 in his final year of football. I guess it's for the ride and having fun and keeping playing the game because you know you're not going to do it the next level. I guess it's the motivator for a player. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I'd kind of be thinking, hey, let's get you out into the real world for a while here, kid. You're not to.
Yeah, exactly. Let's hope you've got your degree. Let's go, you know. Underwater basket weaving, I'm sure you can find something that you can do on that. So, I mean, okay, I work in staffing. I'm an IT recruiter.
Okay.
90% of the companies that I staff for, they don't care what your degree in. They just want you to have a degree. So, just get out in the real world.
I mean, literally, I mean, there's got to be some kind of record set. I mean, he's probably got like 8 degrees by now. He should, because you're always hearing about now all these
guys.
You
should be on that doctorate.
All these guys are finishing in 3 years now, you know, 3.5 years because they're, you know. So I just don't get it. I mean, what he literally, I mean, anybody that he came in with has kids by now, you know what I mean? I mean, it's bizarre.
Yeah, he will have gone through almost 2 recruiting cycles if you want to do it. And if somebody was there for 5 years, he'll be there 9 of 10 years that 2 recruiting classes could be there in the time frame. It's just boggling my mind. My nephew tried to play college football at Iowa Central. They had like 500 kids to try out there. And he gave it up. And I messaged him on Facebook. I'm like, there's still a chance for your son. There's still a chance. Sign a school, and you can do it. So
fine. I mean, that's like shattering Jeff Settles. You know, Jeff Settles' first year was 93-94, and his last year was 98-99. So he played a sixth year. You know, but he didn't play all those years. But I mean, literally, you know, we laugh about Jeff Settles. Well, it's not just there's a guy who's airmailed that record. There's like whole classes full of guys, you know, rosters full of guys that are breaking the Jeff Settles record. I mean, it's just
Iowa State tried to do it last year, you know, with everybody that came back, you know, for their COVID year. So,
and that's another thing about our team this year. I mean, as frustrating as it was, would you really think that the year that we beat Minnesota and Purdue and Wisconsin and Northwestern is the same year that we lose to Nebraska and Iowa State? You know, I mean, just how is that? And Illinois,
don't even, you know, like the Iowa State games were, and the Iowa State and Illinois games were games that were literally taken away from us on BS calls. The fumble on the goal line by the fullback, and then the interception that they were down or whatever it was against Illinois.
Yeah.
You know, just I think it was.
But,
I the way I ended up being able to not want to kill somebody or kill myself for it for the season was I just, like, we've had so many seasons where everything went our way that the law of averages said we had to have this kind of season where all the little things went against us.
Yeah,
I mean,
one of our regular crew, Hawkeye, Indy Hawk, pointed that out. He said, you know, how many one-score games did we win last year and get breaks on and stuff? And we just didn't get those this year, and other teams did. Mm-hmm. You know, Northwestern was one of those schools that used to get those breaks, and this year they certainly didn't, you know. So it's just, you know, I mean, but it's still, I mean, both our football and our basketball team have lost to three-win teams now. You know, we lost to Nebraska, and then our basketball team today losing to Eastern Illinois. I mean, it's just...
Yep.
You know, where does the comedy stop, you know, almost? So, anyway.
I guess it's the year we get to follow the wrestling.
Yeah. That's about the only saving grace is to it. So, anyway, hey, thanks for being on. I'm going to close so I can get going doing some stuff that I usually cut off after an hour and a half to 2 hours. So, we've pretty much hit everything we needed to get to. But
I'm on again for you.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I think we can have some good talks with the whole crew. So
definitely.
It looks like I'm going to be at the game watch. So we were thinking about going out of town, but I'm pretty sure we're going to be at the game watch. So we'll see you then. So in the meantime, if I don't talk
to you
beforehand, have a good Christmas, and we will
see you
probably on December 31st then.
New Year's Eve.
Cool.
Sounds
thanks,
good.
Mike.
Have a great one.
You too.
You're
talk to you later.
Bye.
And that is histrionic Mike, or not Hawkeye Mike, but histrionic. He gets a little, let's say, demonstrative and emotional at some of our game watches. Avid fan, knows his stuff, follows the history and stuff, but he is, I couldn't call him Hawkeye Mike since I already had Hawkeye Mike, so I changed him to histrionic. So, okay, let's go with some final holiday thoughts. It's a busy season. It's often filled with events or gatherings that we'd rather not attend. Yes, we spend money like we're stupid. We spend more time in the kitchen than we do in our own warm beds. We now have a drama of National Signing Day for the college football fans. We have the constant barrage of social media, an ever-growing knowledge that our country and our system are absolutely broken. Guess what? It's not a big deal. If you have family, friends, a job, a roof over your head, and you can complain about the fact that you're stuffed from late November to early January, you're doing fine. If you can send a message to an elected official and still feel reasonably safe, I know it's getting a little iffy there, but I said reasonably safe, you're doing fine. Holidays remind us of loss. Of course, and Hawkeye fans, this loss yesterday stings, no doubt, but flush it, get over it, get past it, and for God's sake, don't tweet at Caden Proctor or his family beyond what changed. I mean, it's one thing to say, hey, what changed? Don't call him an idiot. Don't, you know, he doesn't really even owe us the reason that he switched. That he was stupid and immature enough to insult the University of Iowa, the coaching staff, and yes, his almost teammates, including former high school teammates. That's not him. You won't change the kid. You'll never have to come across him. You'll never have to work with him or do business with him. And please don't blame the staff or the Swarm NIL Collective or even Nick Saban in Alabama. Caden Proctor made his choice, and it won us. In all seriousness, cares. If he lights it up at Bama, so be it. If he doesn't, don't expect him to come crawling back to Iowa City. And if he gets a career-threatening or career-ending injury, no, it isn't karma. It isn't justice. In the immortal words of Hawkeye coach Kirk Ferentz, that's football. That's all it is. Final internet laffy from the Babylon Bee. IRS agents will begin sliding down chimneys looking for gifts of $600 or more. Where do they come up with this stuff? Where did they come up with it? It's just, I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it. In the meantime, folks, good night and Merry Christmas, everyone. I am back next week, the 28th at 5:30, God willing. In the meantime, how about a little Charlie Brown to set us off? Listen to that bass in there. This is the Vince Guaraldi trio doing Motown for a Charlie Brown Christmas. Absolute brilliance. Once again, I want to thank Mike for being on, a.k.a. Histrionic Mike, a.k.a. Avid Mike. Thanks to Sue from New Mexico and T. Bodie and Big Sister for listening in. Two numbers I don't recognize. The Spies, I think. Who knows? And in the meantime, folks, have a great Christmas, and we'll be seeing you back next week before the new year. But in the meantime, like I said, have a great Christmas. Good night, all.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.